It's time for Toronto's Top Line.
I think it was earlier this year where Bill was like really happy before Sid went by. Remember, he was smiling and giggling?
What the hell are you talking about?
And then Sid went by and said, like, snap out of it. Like, or, get that smile
off your
face. He's like, what the hell is your problem, Sid?
This is such an idiot here.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Well, it wasn't meant to be last night, Noodles. I was thinking about you. I was on the couch because I was flipping around.
Yes.
The hockey game obviously was going to draw my attention.
Mm-hmm.
But the NBA draft lottery, I can't get away from that. Any draft lottery I find to be thoroughly entertaining. And last night's NBA draft lottery was incredible theater. And we'll talk about that throughout the afternoon. But I was very curious to see who was going to come bombing out.
Right.
To sing the anthem, and I was hoping it would be Dennis K. Morgan.
Not a chance.
Instead, Keith Urban.
I almost tweeted to you, and I almost tweeted out, but I didn't want to get trolled or people would think that I was trolling. Dennis K. Morgan, you will never see the microphone again in the rest of the playoffs for sure. That's a given for the Nashville Predators.
Well, they're bringing foreigners in here. Keith Urban's Australian.
Doesn't matter. You bring in Nicole Kidman into the building, you get a free... You can sing the anthem. You can do anything you want. He could have dropped the first puck. If Keith Urban wanted to drop the puck, when Kessler and Johansson went... Because you had Nicole Kidman in a box. That is the place to be right now in Nashville.
I guess so. And we got Craig Button in here. I don't know if you were following that story, the anthem guy, happy with Nashville.
What I loved about it, too, is if you look on the game notes for the Nashville home games, they never say who the anthem singer is going to be. Everybody else has the anthem singer at the bottom, right? So it's going to be a surprise when they introduce the anthem singer. And I think it's great. It's country music.
I don't think there's another city that could do this. I really don't.
The center of country music.
Maybe L.A.
Maybe L.A., but the difference is I don't sense that a lot of musicians, a lot of actors are as connected to L.A., the way the country community is connected to Nashville.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean?
Music City. It is Music City.
It's Music City, and there aren't too many, rockers down there or, Calvin Harris isn't living down in Nashville. It's basically country or bust.
Well, I felt bad for Dennis K. Morgan. Now, Craig, we talked about this guy yesterday on air at length because he has a case. This guy's been there for how many games? 180 games straight or something? And the Predators say, Carrie Underwood wants to sing. Like, you can't do that.
But now it's getting to a point, though, where they're seeking out star musicians to come
Absolutely.
And sing. Like, I don't think Keith Urban sent an email to David Poyle saying, hey, congrats on being named finalist for the Executive of the Year.
Right.
Is there any chance I could sing tonight? Like, now I think they're really sticking it to Dennis K. Morgan because they're blatantly trying to make this a tradition.
I don't think they're trying to stick it to him, but listen, you know what? There ends up being a groundswell, too. So now Keith Urban's saying, well, I'll tell you what, there's a lineup now of people that want to sing at the Nashville Predators home games. You're right. They're not saying they do want to sing there now. This is the big stage.
And they're 6-0 at home, too.
Yeah.
Like, if Dennis K. Morgan gets the microphone back and they lose, he's done.
Dennis K. Morgan will sing third home game next year, like he usually does. And if he wants to say no, they'll find somebody else.
Exactly. I think Dennis K.
That's just the way it works.
He sang his last song for the Nashville Predators. And it's unfortunate because he was a good soldier, but they'll find somebody else.
It's a good point, though, how this is becoming... It's like the way comedians used to talk about going on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
And
you got called over.
If you got called over, you really hit a grand slam. And while you're walking over there, you realize I've made it. Like, sitcoms are coming. I'm going to be doing HBO shows.
Right.
If Carson dusts you off, your career could be over.
So Dennis K. Morgan was on Carson, and Carson just let him walk off stage.
Basically. And now it's getting to a point where you are truly defining yourself. Not that these guys need it. Not that Carrie Underwood isn't aware of her celebrity and her success and Keith Urban. But I get the sense like these country stars are like, if they want me to come do it now, it means I'm really a superstar. Right? They're not pulling some guy out of Tootsie's who is half cut and just got to Nashville a week ago. Like, you got to be A-list country
the
star.
The scary
now.
Thing is if you did pull somebody out of Tootsie's, they would be unreal because all of the musicians there are amazing. But you're right. We're talking A-list singers. But who tops Keith Urban?
I'll tell you who tops Keith Urban.
Who?
The guy who threw a skinned duck onto the ice last night.
Yeah, like that. Now, do you think, what is it, the animal activists will be all upset?
Oh, they'll hate that, of course. Because there are pictures out now of him, like, skinning the duck and preparing the duck.
That I didn't see.
It's going to get dicey.
Well, if you want to cook duck, you have to skin it. And you have to prepare it. Like, you don't just take the duck and just throw it on a plate, put it in the oven, and cook it.
Craig,
I
grew up in Alberta.
How do you get your beef?
I still believe that that beef comes from Loblaws. Like, that's the extent of where I want to go. I didn't have the luxury. I've been to Daryl Sutter's farm. I've been to some of the farms where, you know, there's cattle and there's steer and all these things, but I don't want to see. Like, I open up the container at you know, I go to Pusateri's, it's pre-cooked. Mm-hmm. They've made it for me. That duck or whatever, that was weird. But I've always, and I believe I'm on record, I've always hated that octopus in Detroit. I've always hated it. And that guy swinging it around, and it's
Al, Big Al swinging
it. Yeah, I disliked
it. It's a great tradition.
I always disliked Al because he was swinging it around, and I'm sure he's a terrific person, but I always hated that tradition in Detroit. Was there a catfish or something? Somebody had taped a catfish to their back. I thought that had happened in Nashville at some point,
I think
point
it did,
too.
Yeah, I remember
like
something like that.
Like a two-pound catfish. Mm-hmm. The guy saran wrapped it to his back.
Well, that's what this guy did. He, I guess, had saran wrap, and he had the duck around his barrel, and then he put a jersey on top to get into the building. And this is one of those stories where it wouldn't surprise me if the Predators sent out a memo saying, we don't approve of this, but at the same time, you know they love it.
They're winking.
They love it. Because,
don't do that again.
Yeah, like, don't ever do that again. We'll really have an issue with it. Like, they would love
they
this
have
to be the case.
To be politically correct. Craig, you're a manager.
They send out the fake memo of outrage.
Right.
Yes.
Please do not throw any objects onto the ice.
If that happened in Calgary, something like that, it would probably have to have gone up the chain.
We had the guy, remember the streaker that fell over the glass?
Yeah, I was there that night.
Yeah, remember that, Jimmy? He hit the ice and knocked himself cold, which automatically created an automatic erection.
Yes.
I didn't realize that that's what happened when you get knocked cold.
Not heard that story
before. Oh, yeah, the guy climbed the glass. He only had socks on. Red socks. And when he hit the ice, he knocked himself cold. And if you remember, I forget if it was Morris Boyer comes over with a towel and just kind of tosses it.
The guy had an erection.
I do remember that, but I told the story on the weekend actually at an event I was at, but I leave that part out because, you know, there's children.
Yeah, save it for the radio show.
But
sent out a memo asking our fans, please come to the games with more than socks on if you're going to jump on the ice.
I think that makes sense, wouldn't you say? I think at the very least.
That was something else, though. That guy who knocked himself out was, apparently he was from Lethbridge. So people were, when I was talking in Lethbridge, people were saying, oh, yeah, the guy was a student from Lethbridge. And I just remember that was the first healthy scratch of Rob Niedermeyer's career. I think Greg Gilbert was the coach and had scratched him. And Needs had played, let's say, 500 straight games in the league. And he was a healthy scratch that night. And Scotty Nichols skated by the bench and said, boys, Needs has hit rock bottom. He's jumped from the press box. So we're all on the bench laughing while this idiot is laying there with an erection, and we thought he was dead.
Yeah.
And we're all got our jerseys over our head laughing. Oh, yeah. But, I mean, those are the things. I love those comments around the bench. That's the thing, though. Now, if you're laughing and they pan the bench and this guy is dead on the other side of the ice, they're thinking, what a bunch of insensitive.
Well, exactly. I mean, talk to Phil and Malkin about that. They were heated. Like, that was genuine emotion. But if you're laughing at someone who's got some serious problems,
yeah,
you know it's going to develop into a big.
How about
story?
Jared Bohl last night laughing after Perry scores his goal?
That
right?
was
so
hilarious.
And the cameras are all on you. See, that's funny you bring up Robbie.
Yeah.
Because if you you probably may not recall, but we played in Vancouver the next night.
Oh, I didn't know that. I knew.
And I went to talk to Rob. Oh, he was mad.
Oh, yeah.
And he took it out on me pretty good. And, you know, and that's, you just have to. You know, it was one. You know what it was? That was one of those, you know what, like, talk to me. Don't just.
Yeah.
Ban me.
Yeah.
And Rob had a good point, and, you know, it was always good. I got lots of time for Rob Niedermeyer.
Well,
I agree.
Yesterday, I don't think we brought this up on the air, but Noodles, you and I, we were talking off the air about how we're not convinced John Gibson can steal a game.
Yeah.
And yet, he had that opportunity last night.
He was damn close, though. I mean, it was tough for me to fault him on either goal because the first goal, Arvidsson actually gets pushed in by his own D-man. I think it was Manson or Vatanen. Vatanen pushes him in. So he tries to make it. He doesn't sell it. He tries to get there. And then the second goal, he loses sight. It hits Arvidsson and goes back door.
It did kind of have a James Neal goal feel to it.
It did. Like,
it
he found it.
Two.
He
like,
couldn't find it because he was looking right and it went left. But it is one of those things where whether you like it or not, a goalie has to absolutely steal a game.
He has to.
And it was that close.
He was that close because Anaheim, they had nothing last night.
Yeah,
they had nothing.
They weren't very good.
Maybe it's the building. Maybe it's Nashville. Maybe it's I don't even have an explanation how you get outshot 2-1, and they had nothing going early in that game. Nothing.
Right. Or late.
Or late, yeah, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, they just couldn't muster up any type of sustained attack.
Yet I don't think that swings the series. I'm not sitting here saying Preds in five.
Right.
Anaheim's, they did that against Edmonton. I thought Edmonton thoroughly outplayed them games 1-6, and then they dominated game 7.
Yeah.
They just have that ability, and you're playing with fire. I wouldn't suggest it's a good idea to go down early, even though they scored the first goal yesterday. But they do have a tendency to get down a goal or two early in a game, and they come out of the gate pretty slow.
Mm-hmm.
But the proof is in the pudding that they have the ability to bounce back.
Yeah, they do.
And I think I could see them winning game 4. I think that series is going to go 6 or 7. I think both have the opportunity to go 6 or 7.
I liked what Randy said post-game last night, too. He said, hey, you know what? The game was right there for the taking, and we didn't play our best game. You know, I thought it was really good. That's what you want to try to draw out of a game. Okay, what do we got to do to be better? He knows they can be better. And yet the game was right there.
Yeah, it was. And I believe, to your point, Brian, I think Anaheim is a really good team. But they don't play a consistent game. Like, they can really ramp it up, absolutely ramp it up, where Getzlaff looks like the best player on the planet when he decides, like, hey, I'm going to take control of this game. But I have yet to see, I don't know, other than that game 7 against Edmonton, where I thought that was a start-to-finish effort, I haven't seen Anaheim, like, dominate a game for 60 minutes, I guess, outside of that game 7 against Edmonton, where Edmonton really didn't have much going on. But I expect a lot more out of Anaheim as far as consistency. That group, I think they're a really good team. John Gibson's a really good young goaltender, but he's really inconsistent for me. Like, he's, you know, Frederik Andersen had to kind of earn it for fans here. Gibson, I've watched him a lot. He still has to earn it, just not that it matters to him, but, like, to me, for me to be like, hey, I think this guy is an elite goaltender. He has a chance to be, but he still needs that consistency. And Anaheim has that feel to them where they're really good and then they're really sleepy. And if they're going to get out of this series, they can't be sleepy.
No, Nashville's a really good team.
They're
a well-oiled machine right now. Mm-hmm. I was surprised to see pictures of Mike Babcock circulating in the building. This guy travels, man. I guess you got to give him credit. He's paid more than any other coach in the league. Now, maybe he was down there for a family event or he just wanted to take into a game, but I think naturally a lot of Leaf fans are connecting the dots thinking Anaheim might have to trade a defenseman. And I don't know where Nashville's situation will be in terms of who they protect, but they've got a top four that might be the best in the NHL. And if they decide to go 7 forwards, 3D, that means
they're going 7-3, and they have 7 defensemen that are better than any 7 in the NHL.
Anaheim?
Yeah, because I'm including Jakob Larsson in that.
What about Nashville, though? What do you see happening there? Could you see one of Ekholm or Ellis being available via trade because they decide to protect 7 forwards?
Well, I mean, you have to ask yourself, what 7 forwards are they going to protect?
I don't know. I tried to do it last night, and
I think they're 8-1. I think Nashville's clearly 8-1.
I think they're a tough time because there are some guys up front who are nice players, but they're not. I mean,
like Forsberg, you're saving Johansson.
Johansson,
but Arvidsson. Is he eligible? I don't know if he's eligible
or not. But I think there's guys that they would probably be all right with losing up front, mm-hmm. as opposed to somebody on the
back. Just remember, you're only losing one player.
Right.
You might have 5 players exposed. You're only losing one. So you ask yourself, okay, out of this group, are we going to be that concerned if we lose that one player? No way in my view can they risk losing one of those defensemen, because outside of Johansson and Forsberg up front, Yeah. There's nobody else that fits that category.
Right, and I'm with you. Men. So I can't imagine Babcock was thinking, I need to get down here to take a look at Ryan Ellis because maybe he'd be available, or Matthias Ekholm.
Does he sing? Maybe he's
I think Babcock's looking at Anaheim and saying.
Which is interesting because how many times do coaches get sent out? I mean, you would know this, Craig. I always just assumed that would be Hunter in the building, or it would be Shanahan or Lou or whatever.
But why wouldn't you? Like,
I'm with you. Send it. But conventional wisdom would suggest the coach isn't the guy sitting there saying, I want this guy when you
make
that
trade.
Why not? Because that guy's going to play for that coach.
Exactly. Right.
That's exactly who I want watching the player.
And I'll go a step
further. If
it's
a prospect, I don't want Mike Babcock watching him. But that guy that's going to play in the NHL coming on my team, Mike, get in there.
I'll go a step further. If he has any type of relationship with Laviolette, maybe he has a coffee with him in the morning and says, tell me about this guy. You know, I don't know. I don't know how things work. And Lavi's a pretty intense guy. Yeah, may tell him to get the hell out of the office.
That would be pretty ballsy.
It would be
for
ballsy.
Mike Babcock to go in during the playoffs
and sit down with Peter Laviolette.
Tell me about the opposition?
That's true, actually.
I think I would give it the old Randy Carlyle, beat it.
Yeah, not a chance, actually. Now that I'm thinking, that's ridiculous.
But you can talk to GMs
and scouts.
You can
be in the building. Good on Mike for doing his due diligence and not sending Hunter or whatever.
But who says Mark's not there?
Guaranteed. He's probably right there.
Who says, I don't know who's there. I'm just saying, but if you have a guy and you're looking at a player that wants to come in and you want the input of your coach, it's not like, I'm not saying he gets the final decision, but that's the guy who's, it matters. How does he fit in? Here's the cost. Here's what we'd have to give up. Yeah. Everything that goes with it. That's a head coach. That's where you have everybody in.
Well, he was in Europe, though, too, right?
Right.
And I'm sure he looked at these two.
Drager Cafe.
Yes,
that's why
the Drager Cafe.
Exactly.
But I'm sure he's trying to do some due diligence on these two Swedish defensemen they signed yesterday. But how would he know? You know, what would he really know about their game? But this is a guy who he's getting paid a lot of money.
Right.
But clearly he's involved in scouting and the conversation, and I think that's a good thing. I think that's a proactive thing.
Right.
I'm just saying I don't recall hearing that in the past. You know, 10 years ago, some coach is golfing throughout May, you know, watching hockey on TV. But Babcock clearly is saying, send me to Nashville. I want to go see Montour play. I want to see Manson or whoever it might be because those are the guys we have circled at this point.
And I think –
I don't think either one of those guys are coming to Toronto unless you're giving up a big price.
They have
Manson or Montour.
I think it's Vatanen that'll move.
That
that's
could
what
be
I
on
think.
The outside.
That's interesting. He's a good player.
Yeah, he's a good player. Manson's unique. Montour's young. He's on an entry level contract, so that's why he becomes valuable because of his contract. And to me, Josh Manson's unique.
Do you think they'd ever trade Hampus Lindholm?
Yeah, if you want to give up something really good, you're not getting Hampus Lindholm for nothing.
He's a hell of a player. Like that's
you're not getting Sammy Vatanen for you got to give up something.
Right. Oh,
I can tell you what, Bob Murray does not even have to make a call.
No.
He just sits back and goes, oh, okay, this is so-and-so team. Well, yeah, what do you have in mind?
Yeah.
And he just writes down his notes on every player. He doesn't even have to phone anybody. They're
that's
all phoning
good,
him because he's got an embarrassment of riches on the
blue. But that's
line.
The one thing, though. So what you're saying is that Las Vegas not going to have a sniff at any of those guys because Murray will be proactive. He won't be proactive. Somebody will be proactive with him before that.
You have to. You can't expose Vatanen knowing that they're going to claim
it. I haven't talked to a GM in the league, okay? Uh-huh. They'll take a fifth-round draft pick rather than get nothing.
Exactly.
Right.
They are not giving up any player to just say, oh, Vegas, you know what? No,
right.
So I don't see Vegas, unless Vegas is going to give up something significant.
Right.
Which is something that hasn't been brought up. Maybe Vegas jumps the queue and
says,
wait a minute, no, let's have a conversation here.
Right.
But Anaheim's different because of what you just said. They've got an embarrassment of riches on the back end. But I also think that some teams probably have to be careful at overvaluing their players and thinking someone's going to call them before they're claimed by Vegas.
Right.
Because it may end up like a situation like that where you're like, well, we might lose this guy, but we're going to trade him. We think we'll get a second or third rounder. And one team calls and says, no, we'll give you a seventh rounder. Or you can lose him for free. And then 5 minutes before, they're like, all right, I guess we'll take the seventh rounder.
Yeah.
Because you're right. I would rather a seventh round pick than nothing.
But from what it sounds like, I don't think that Bob Murray has to deal with that.
Maybe other GMs
will have to deal with that where they're like, you know, it'd be interesting, like, I keep thinking that Chris Weidman could be the guy on the outside in Ottawa.
he's a healthy scratch at different points during the playoffs.
Yeah, and it just they've got some young defensemen coming there.
Clayson's acquitted himself quite well.
And
Ben Harper looks like you know, like he's got some potential. And you know, you got to give up somebody. I mean, maybe they trade him.
And Shabbat's coming in the wings, right?
Shabbat's
so like they've got a group there that is pretty solid. So I keep thinking, like, you know, I like Weidman. He's a puck mover. He's got a little edge to him. Yeah, he's got his deficiencies, but that's somebody I would have my circle on if I'm Vegas and say, you know, that's a guy who could probably play in my top four.
But what about another team?
But that's what I'm saying.
Exactly, right.
So like, it'd be interesting if Pierre Dorion is sitting back and saying, you know, through Weidman's play and how well we've done this year, maybe this is a guy who could fetch us more than a seventh rounder. Maybe it gets up to a third rounder or something.
I think that's where other teams have to be really like astute and smart, and they got to go, that Chris Weidman can really fit in our blue line.
Right.
So what do you want, Pierre? Like, I mean, teams have to be able to do that. And
right.
I think that, you know, I keep looking at Mark Methot. To me, there's just no way Mark Methot gets exposed because of what he means to Erik Karlsson.
Right.
Well, and also, like, from a Leaf standpoint, Leaf fans are getting greedy. And they're saying, who are you going to find that's going to pair up with Riley or Gardner and be immediately in that top four? I'm sure there's a lot of teams that would also look at a situation like this and say, that fifth defenseman's better than my fifth defenseman. So
yeah.
You can upgrade your third pairing, too.
Absolutely.
Like, you're upgrading your team in general. It's not only about hitting your grand slam.
You're right. That's a great point because we're all talking about Roman Polak, and he's going to get a contract in that. But if you believe that there's somebody out there that slides in at five nicely, that's an upgrade on Polak, that's what you do,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's a great point. We're all looking at one and four, if you believe Gardner's three. Why not be looking at five and six? If you believe, I think through osmosis we're thinking guys who are in that second pairing get pushed down, like a Carrick or
sure. Well, and also look at what Pittsburgh's dealing with. At some point, you're going to need
depth yes.
on the back end. You need it. And tonight, Pittsburgh's in Ottawa taking on the Sens, and it still continues to be a conversation about the style of play that Ottawa is putting on the ice. And no one in Ottawa cares. The Senators don't care. And here's why I fully support it, and I say fill your boots, go out and do whatever you can.
Right.
I don't see them in this situation next year. I don't see Ottawa going into next year being a top five cup contending team. So if you're here now, do whatever you have to win.
Yep.
Do whatever you have to win. Take advantage of the moment, because mm-hmm. this has been lightning in a bottle to an extent. This has been a bit surprising just based on some of the other teams that are out and the fact that Ottawa continues to hover around.
Right.
So you don't have to apologize for anything.
Nope.
Because guess what? Next year, if you don't make the playoffs, guess what your fans would say?
Effective.
I'll take boring in playoffs, please.
Yeah.
As opposed to erratic and wild and highlight type action, but you only play 82 games.
I don't think there's a listener here that would say they wouldn't want the Toronto Maple Leafs to be in the exact same situation. If Babcock had Austin Matthews dumping the puck in, don't make a play. Like, just let's win 1-0. It's not the sexiest play, but it's effective. We'll see how far it takes them. I've watched Ottawa all season long. I think they're better than people give them credit for. That's the one thing I have consistently said because mm-hmm. I've watched them live, and I've been in the building, and I've seen the buy-in. I know how good Erik Karlsson is. I think Craig Anderson is a really good goaltender that people sleep on. I think their defensive core is really solid, and the way that they work around that system, it helps them out. And I think, Brian, we were talking about it yesterday. They may not have a superstar up front, but they've got some B-plus guys that are damn good. In the Stones and Hoffman and Brassard and Ryan and Pajot, you go, they're pretty deep. Like,
well, and I would add one thing to that. Well, I'd add two things to about the Ottawa Senators, to your point, Brian. You know, Washington's out, Chicago's out, Pittsburgh's decimated, and the Senators have also got a huge boost from the return of MacArthur and the return to form of Bobby Ryan. There was no way that the Ottawa Senators are going into this playoffs and going, yeah, Bobby Ryan's going to be a real difference maker. Mm-hmm. But he's become a real difference maker. And,
right.
and then Clark MacArthur's become a difference maker, a healthy guy. So, I'm with you. You got an opportunity. I mean, Ray Ferraro's going to be up after five. I mean, ask him about 93.
Absolutely. And we'll get to Ray. Ray's going to be back on the show. We're looking forward to that just after 5. Jerry's percentages. Jerry calling in his hot takes today at 5:30. Speaking of Clark MacArthur, obviously people associate concussion issues with him.
Right.
Well, Gisele Bündchen has dropped a grenade on the sports world earlier today doing an interview and outing her husband, Tom Brady, saying he had a concussion last year. She went as far as to say he's had multiple concussions.
And now she went on to say he's dealing with some every day or something to that point, right? She was kind of going on and on. I wonder if she knows exactly what
he
a concussion
has concussions
is.
Pretty much every.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we don't talk about it. He doesn't. Yeah. Like she, I think she realized, like, oh, like, can you imagine her phone when she walks out of that?
Here's the best part about it is we're going to play the audio and we'll let you hear it. But she says, you know, it's really difficult to see him go through it. And it's a violent sport. It's an aggressive sport. And you want your husband to be okay. We want to live forever. So she's out there basically saying, I'd probably prefer if Tom walked away.
Yeah.
Brady can't go a day without telling people he's playing until he's 50. How's that for dinner table conversations? Oh, Giselle wants him out, and he's like, no, I'm playing for another decade. I'm not going anywhere.
I'm telling you, she's in big trouble.
I think she might be
like,
in
she may
trouble.
Get a call from Belichick.
That would be trouble.
Like, he may be at the house waiting for her.
Yep.
We'll play that audio next. All right, Ray Ferraro is back on the show. He'll join us in about a half an hour. Jerry's percentages in an hour. How about the past 24 hours in Boston? They win the draft lottery last night. They've got game one against the Cavs tonight. And Giselle is outing Tom Brady for a concussion issue this past year. And we'll let you hear what Giselle had to say this morning. And we'll catch up with Chad Finn from Boston.com and Globe Sports. We'll do that in 2 minutes. All right, Ray will join us at 5 p.m. Jerry's percentages in an hour. I really do hate Boston on so many different levels, and 100% of it is just simply jealousy. Like, if you grew up in Boston, if you were born in, like, the early 90s, think about the run you've been on for the past 25 years.
The Patriots alone, the Patriots Red Sox.
Alone, but the Red Sox have won...
The Bruins, the Celtics.
The Bruins won. The Celtics won. The Celtics are still playing tonight, and they win the draft lottery last night. It doesn't stop.
Well, but Boston University and Boston College in hockey.
Ray will be on his high horse because he loves the Red Sox.
But that has nothing to do with what happened last night.
No, but talking about Boston, that city is. And to be honest, it's a beautiful city, too.
Oh, yeah.
And the bars are unreal there.
Like, yeah, I don't like their nightlife.
I've never had a bad night in Boston.
Really? I find that there's nothing going on, man. It's kind of boring after midnight.
Really?
You didn't come
I'm not
us.
A fan of Boston. Well,
you didn't I think you have a bias when you go
I
there.
Do. I love Boston. It's all steeped in jealousy.
There's nothing about Boston I don't like.
It's a great city. All right, let's bring in Chad Finn from Boston.com and Globe Sports. Chad, what's the bigger story in Boston right now? What Giselle had to say about Brady and his concussions, the Celtics winning the lottery, or Game 1 Celtics-Cavs tonight?
I think it's probably the Celtics game tonight because it all sort of melds into one thing right now where they beat the Wizards in a pretty thrilling Game 7. Then they win the draft lottery, and then you jump right into the series against LeBron and the Cavs. So the Celtics are primarily on people's minds. And it's a weird culture around here with the Patriots anyway because Patriots fans feel like the league is out to get them. The Deflategate thing will never, ever go away in Patriots fans' minds. And so there's going to be some rationalization with this, with the Brady concussion thing, people being paranoid that the league is going to punish the Patriots for him, that sort of thing. But primarily the focus is basketball today rather than keeping an eye on Roger Goodell.
All right, well, let's quickly listen to what Giselle had to say this morning. She was on CBS this morning, talking about Brady and I guess his injury history and what he's going to do in the future. And here's what she had to say.
As a wife, I'm a little bit, you know, it's, as you know, it's not the most like, let's say, an aggressive sport, right? Football, like he had a concussion last year. I mean, he has concussions pretty much. I mean, we don't talk about, but he does have concussions. And I don't really think it's a healthy thing for your body to go through like a, you know, through that kind of aggression, like all the time. That could not be healthy for you.
Ian Rappaport is reporting that the NFL has reviewed the Brady situation from a year ago, and there are no records that indicate that Mr. Brady suffered a head injury or concussion. So is that the end of the story, in your opinion, or will this just continue to pick up steam?
I think it carries for a couple days for sure. I don't think it's logical that the league punishes them in any way. You saw the Richard Sherman thing with the Seahawks where he had the knee injury all season. They left him off the injury report, which is pretty shady, and they didn't get any any punishment for that. I think it would probably be a similar situation here, even if they did find something. But what Boston people have been doing the course of the day since Giselle's audio came out is they've been trying to find the injury, trying to find a point over the course of the season where he took a shot in the head and it was he got up looking groggy or wobbly, and it's hard to find. He took one in the Super Bowl in the first half where he got nailed coming from opposite sides and his head kind of rattled, but you get the sense the way she was talking that this was something that happened during the regular season, that was something he had to deal with over the course of the year, and it's been kind of hard to find him taking that hit that makes you say, okay, this is it. This is where he got his bell rung. This is where they hit it. So I imagine the league is looking for that right now, but nobody around here has really been able to identify a certain play.
Chad, I wanted to just go back to the Celtics winning the lottery and the long history of Celtics, Lakers. Now they're picking 1-2. Is there any type of back and forth between those two organizations trying to figure out who Boston will take and maybe trying to maximize it going into the NBA draft?
Celtics fans haven't had a lot of lottery luck for all the good things that have happened to them. They missed out on Duncan in 97 with the highest odds. Missed out on Odin, which turned out to be Durant, the best pick in 2007. They had the highest odds then. So there was a real negative mindset going into this. And when it came down to the final three envelopes, and it was the Sixers, Lakers, and Celtics, I guarantee you if you had polled Boston fans at that moment, you would have got like 99.7% saying, oh, the Lakers are going to get it. Magic screwed us again. It's just kind of the mindset around here, even with all the success that has been had. And it was a mild surprise that they actually won the thing. And my joke at the time was they should, Wick Grosbeck, the Celtics owner who was there at the lottery, he should have told Magic Johnson right then to say they're taking Lonzo Ball, because it's pretty clear that the Lakers want Lonzo Ball. And, you know, maybe there's a deal to be made in that situation. But all the good things you guys are talking about that have happened to Boston sports fans the last 15 years or so, there's still a pretty good strain of negativity that runs through here. And it was apparent going into the lottery last night just based on the past history.
With Chad Finn from Boston.com and Globe Sports, how do you think Boston would react as a city, as a media, to them drafting Lonzo Ball and LaVar Ball moving to Boston?
Lonzo would be nice. It seems like a terrific kid, and he's a wonderful playmaker. I don't know how if you can watch him and not see Jason Kidd at Cal. I mean, the similarities are striking, but his dad has gone on sports radio up here. He doesn't say no to much, and he's been on sports radio up here. And you can tell that Boston sports radio hosts are really would like to see Lonzo Ball end up here, because it's his dad is compelling entertainment and gets a lot of buzz when he goes on, negative and positive reaction, but a lot of reaction, and that's what they're looking for. So there's sort of a sense here that they would love to have the guy, even though that they know it would be a headache to some degree for the Celtics. And you know, Brad Stevens, the Celtics coach, was asked about this a few weeks ago, and he said he was asked if Lonzo's dad might be a distraction, and he said, well, this is the NBA, you know, we can put him up on the ninth floor, which is the highest level in the building, and kind of keep him away from the court. I think there's a comfort within the Celtics, and probably with the Lakers too, that if they draft this kid, that they can control the situation, even as overbearing as his father is.
Thank you for doing this. Really appreciate the insight, Chad.
You bet. Glad to talk to you guys.
There he is, Chad Finn from Boston.com.
I would run from that player.
It's always interesting, though, when you hear that and you talk about, like, run from him, run. And Jamie, you and I were talking about, it's not just the player you're getting. It's everything surrounding the player, the entourage.
You're inheriting a circus.
But and as an organization, I don't know how you – it's nice to say the ninth floor.
Right.
But when you draft a player first overall, and you know, I say this all the time about sports, it's an inverted pyramid. The power lay with the players.
Right.
And that's not going to change. And, you know, when you have a player and you a real top player that's at the top, it's easy to say, oh, yeah, we'll put his dad on the ninth floor. But if the kid isn't going to put his dad on the ninth floor, he ain't going to the ninth floor.
Well, exactly. And that's the truth. The only way this is ending is if Lonzo Ball walks away from LaVar Ball.
And you think at some point he will grow some stones and tell him to take a lap.
I think he probably will. I've just seen this happen too often in the past. I think at some point this guy will legitimately cost his kid – something significant, even though you might argue that the endorsement deals with Nike and Under Armour would classify, but he's bought into this big baller brand. He's bought into his dad speaking on his behalf and him trying to be an entrepreneur as opposed to an endorser and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But his dad isn't going to cost him from going top three or four in the draft. He's too good. But what LeVar Ball has become, and it's exactly what Chad Finn pointed out, and I can attest to this just from my own standpoint, the Boston media is praying for him because he's interesting content. Right. LeVar Ball has turned into the Donald Trump of sports media. Like, that's what he is. He's offensive. He's loud. He's obnoxious. He says stupid things, but people can't get enough of him because he's a content creator.
Right.
Like, that's what he is. And you can hate on him all you want, but you do not stop listening to him if he's barking away.
Yeah, I think Donald Trump should hire him as press secretary if he's moving out Sean Spicer then.
I wouldn't even be shocked. I really wouldn't. But LeVar Ball is the Donald Trump for sports media types.
Yeah.
He's on everywhere. ESPN, FS1, I'll bet you we should try to get him on. We probably could get him on.
Really? You think he would do it? Do our show?
It sounds like he'll call into any radio show in the world. I guess the sales pitch would be easy. You come on, talk about your brand. Why wouldn't you want to sell shoes in Toronto?
Who's buying them? And then he would probably, he chirped a lady today, right?
Yeah, he was on Colin Cowherd's show, and it was Christine Leahy.
Leahy, yeah.
Here, let's play a couple of these clips, because this is what I'm talking about, him being Trump.
Right.
Okay, this first one is causing a big storm, because he comes off as sexist and just downright
ignorant.
Clownish.
Yeah.
This is what he said.
Have you sold any shoes yet?
Yeah, I've sold a good amount to me. Like I said, there's different amounts.
How many?
Stay in your lane.
Wait, anyways, what's calling her like I was telling you, man.
I don't even worry about her over there. Like, every
why
time
not?
She scares
I think
me
that's
to
kind
death.
Of disrespectful.
She says she scares Lonzo. Lonzo's scared of me. She scares
I
me.
Said
that's
I'm
why
scared
I don't look
Lonzo?
That way. I don't look over there because she scares me.
Well,
I'm thinking of Saul right now.
I'm just trying. I'm
Leave
I'm,
me alone. I'll tell you, 400-500 pair.
So during it, he's not even looking at her. She's behind him, and he won't turn around to acknowledge her. And then at the end, he goes, I'll tell you, and he tells Cowherd. So he won't give her an answer. But this last part, now he's taking a run at Jason Whitlock. Whitlock works for FS1. He's a big guy.
Right.
He's, you know, he's always been a big guy. He's had weight issues or whatever. But this is the Trump comment, because Trump cannot let anything go.
Can't help himself.
He has to take a run. He has to always counterattack.
Right.
Listen to what LeVar Ball had to say, because Whitlock has been very critical of him.
You know what? He don't need no credibility to say I'm a gangster and I do this and I do that. No, Lonzo's a ball player. He is who he is. And like I said, and going back to Whitlock, I don't think he can comment on anything but snacks.
Now, that's a little harsh.
It's going to be harsh, because he want to be harsh on me.
So you disrespect women and people for their weight?
No, that's what you say. I didn't say nothing about no weight.
No, you just said that to me.
Like I told him, I'm not even worried about you right now. Keep in your lane.
Can you look
me in
the eye?
Like I said, Whitlock, I don't want to look you in the eye. You scare me to death.
So Whitlock started it, so I'm going to take runs at him.
Yeah.
Like, that is Trump 101. Anyone says anything about Trump, he has the ability to just go.
It's thin-skinned.
Yeah,
but you know what's going to happen now is people are going to be – what he's done is he's opened himself up to, hey, come on our show. And then people are going to take runs at him to see how far they can get him to go. He's already gone.
Well, why wouldn't women say, we're not watching Fox Sports anymore? Why wouldn't brands that are paying to go on Fox? I mean, the disrespect he showed to the lady there.
Yeah.
I mean, is that acceptable? Is that tolerable?
No, not at all.
But as I'm concerned, I know it's all news. Well, guess what? Being racist and being a bigot and calling out people is news, too. It's still not right.
It's not right, but when the president does it, when the president is setting a tone, this is the world we live in, because Trump sells.
Yeah.
SNL has never been more popular.
Hey, listen.
CNN has never been more popular.
You saw what happened with Fox. They all ended up saying, we're pulling our ads. And what ended up happening? See ya. That's where you make them hurt, right in the pocketbook.
Well,
that guy is disrespectful.
Well,
you know what? You can have an opinion. You can be over the top. I have no problem with that. But when you're so blatantly disrespectful, I got no time for it.
Well, here's another thing. He sold 400 or 500. What is it? And that's not a lot of shoes.
That's terrible. It's a terrible
400 or 500. It's enough for me. Mm-hmm. Then you're an idiot, because if you're now at that price, like, he thinks he's making out like a bandit. 400 or 500 at $500.
How much does it cost to produce, though?
Probably
$10 out of China.
Yeah, I don't know, but you have to have a run. And so, if you're
it's
only
probably costing
500,
them, like, you know, maybe a couple hundred a shoe, but still, you're making 300 per sale.
He ain't making money on 400 or 500.
That's what I'm saying.
No, he's not.
Because of the production
cost. But what he's banking on now is if Lonzo Ball goes to the Lakers and becomes the face of the Lakers,
right,
that he's banking on long-term it paying off for him. We'll get back into this conversation later in the afternoon. Ray Ferraro will join us in about 15 minutes. Jerry's percentages at 5:30. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. All right, Ray's back on the show in about 10 minutes. Jerry's percentages at 5:30. We've got Dallas Aikens on as well this afternoon at 6:30. We'll get back into LeVar Ball, the NBA draft lottery, and Giselle potentially outing Tom Brady for concussion issues in the past. Hour 2 up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.